Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. On May 19, Tajikistan was seen to another major prison break, which ended with the killing of 32 people. It was the second incident of this type within the last 6 months, and authorities say both of these incidents were orchestrated by the Islamic State members, and most of those killed were also members of this terrorist organization, which is active in the Middle East. These incidents are taking place at a time when Tajikistan is going through tough times economically, where civil liberties are crushed, opposition members are chased out or detained. On today's Majlis podcast, we plan to shed light on why these prison breaks are repeating, what are their underlying causes, possible connections and scenarios as to where things are headed in the country. Joining me in the discussion are Steve Severdlu, Human Rights Watch's Central Asia researcher, Dr. Helen Thibault, Associate Professor of Humanities and Social Science Studies at the Nazarbayev University, Selimjan Ayubov, Acting Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik Service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very, very nice to have you. So let's start, Selimjan, with you. It's been a couple of days already since the latest prison break in town of Wahdat. Are things any clearer today as to what happened in that prison and why?
Unfortunately, the answer couldn't be assertive. Still, we don't know many, many details, many, many things, but at least this time, the authorities were fast to tell what happened inside of the prison. And even this, the speed of the publishing the statement also brought kind of things that if it's true or not. Hmm. However, we contacted many people who somehow connected to the inmates, relatives, and especially that night, our correspondents have been there because the things started when someone called our reporter and told that a lot of ambulances driving towards Wahdat prison. So, and that's why we decided to send our people there. And we talked several women who spend nights in the prison for meeting their husbands. Mm. And the police forced them to leave the prison. And they were outside of the prison at 2 o'clock at midnight. At that time, it's looking like there was silent, no any noises. So we tried to reconstruct the flow of the event. Mm. So there is many, many holes that we couldn't fill in. That's why we have no full information.
These holes that you are referring to.
For example, so we know that it started at 7:30 or 7:35. Usually, this is the time of the fast breaking for Muslim people inside of the prison. And during that time, it's hard. Even most of the people were standing for the evening prayer before breaking fast, Ramadan fast. So how it was possible? However, the woman who was there is saying that it's confirming somehow it was between 7:30 and 8 o'clock at the evening when suddenly they heard gunshots and the electricity gone. It was dark, so probably we can say that it happened somewhere between 7:30 and 8 o'clock at evening. Another hole is that who started that? Mm. Now, the official statement is saying that a group of the people who were sentenced for the being either members, either supporters of the Islamic State, attacked prison guard and taken hostages, three of them, and tried to leave the prison. However, other sources are saying different things, that those people attacked Islamic Party members because they would disagree on the jailbreak. They started telling them not to do this because there will be bloodshed and there will be nothing good out of that. So different things. However, we don't know for sure what exactly happened there. But the result, yes, we can confirm that the RFURL Tajik Service correspondents observed the funeral of, for example, two members of the Islamic Party and the religious leader, Shaykh Timur, and also Mr. Makhanov, who allegedly founded the Islamic Party of Turkestan and was in the jail, in the same jail, and also Behruz Gulmurad, son of the Gulmurad Halimov, former Tajik colonel, renegade colonel, who joined ISIS and became a war minister in ISIS. So, yes, we can confirm that. However, at the same time, we don't know the fate of about more than dozens who wounded during the operation against rioters.
Salimjan, please hold your thoughts about some of the names that you mentioned. I would like to talk about the significance of that before. Let me, Steve, take your thoughts on this. I mean, Salimjan mentioned a couple of holes here. Do you have any holes in your mind, the way the story developed and the way the story ended?
Well, it's yet another terrible tragedy in just 6 months. The second prison riot resulting in dozens of deaths in 6 months, and also within a six-month period, or roughly that amount of time. It's not long since the ISIS-related attack in Dangara of last year. So this is, we're seeing Tajikistan in just a really a terrible state in the past few days and the past year. There are many, many questions. As Salimjan correctly stated, the speed with which the government put out its narrative and provided a list of victims and its own narrative, in a way, raised more questions than answers. And, you know, we're left trying to collect information from a variety of sources, just as OZOD is, I'm sure, also scrambling to put together accounts and testimonies. But one thing we have been able to verify from some of the relatives of the prisoners inside the prison is that indeed there were attacks. It appears that the IRPT members that were attacked, and even another political prisoner like Zaid Saidov, was attacked during these incidents. It raises a sort of urgent, I would say one of the most urgent and immediate concerns, is that we believe some of these politically sensitive cases, political prisoners, religious prisoners, should be urgently moved from the prisons around Tajikistan. And, you know, they're sort of sprinkled throughout various prisons across the country, but they should be immediately released. They should be, at a minimum, we think they should be placed under house arrest or transferred to sort of home detention, because we fear that, you know, what this incident seems to point to is that whether it's from the government or it's from, you know, ISIS or other extremist groups, there's a real imminent danger to life and limb of the politically related prisoners, but others as well. So to have two deadly prison riots within 6 months, I think what it means first and foremost is that the International Committee of the Red Cross should be involved, should be able to immediately visit Tajikistan, and we need to see really meaningfully independent international investigation into what happens. That there are more questions than answers at this point.
Helene, you have studied Tajik prisons in your work. When we talk about this prison in Wahdat, what comes to your mind? What kind of place is this? What kind of people are in there? And does it make sense that the way the Tajik authorities are explaining this?
Well, I agree with what has been said before, that there is, I think, something seriously really wrong with the carceral system in Tajikistan, because we see a lot of violence, two times in the last 6 months, indeed. But there were prison breaks before, famous one in 2010, I think almost 20 inmates who were also accused, detained on charges of extremism, broke out of jail in 2010, followed by an important military sort of police work related to that and connected to, which led to many deaths, actually. So there is something wrong with the prison system. And we all know and that from what has been told before and from testimonies that we get from Tajikistan, that conditions are pretty terrible inside Tajik prisons. In terms of who are the inmates, I think this particular prison in Baghdad had a capacity of 1,500 people. So it's a relatively large, big prison. And again, some of the victims were high profile from the IRPT, Islamic Revival Party. But you also have someone, a political opponent, also pretty famous, Zaid Saidov, who was unharmed during that prison break. But indeed, the population, I think it was also an interview that was done by Radio Free Europe or OZODI, in Tajikistan that there were reports of people arguing over religious issues within the prison. So the son of one of the victims, Sator-san, mentioned that there were disputes between different religious groups within the prison. Whether they are ISIS or not is unclear. But so this has been reported. I'm not sure this is the reason why this riot happened. And again, we can further continue discussion about whether or not it's the role of ISIS is involved in this. So far, I don't think that no one in ISIS has announced. I mean, no site has announced that ISIS claimed responsibility for that. So, but I think we can keep that for further discussion.
Actually, let's do that now. And Bruce, what do you see? And the version claimed by the authorities is like apparently the attackers were alleged members of ISIS who, again, according to authorities, grabbed a couple of knives and sharp objects. I don't know what that stands for. So then they started killing, and then this turmoil has started. And also, I believe there is a similarity between the way the story is told with the other break that we had earlier 6 months ago in Khujand, for example. How you explain the way these stories are told? How credible are they? Whether the way the stories are told makes any sense to you?
Well, I mean, the Tajik government, Tajik authorities don't have a lot of credibility anymore as far as I'm concerned. That's my opinion. I mean, the stories they've told in the past have so often turned out to be at the least very exaggerated and at the most just flat out untrue. You know, the fact that they had a story so quickly, you know, on the one hand, you could say that's good that they were able to explain to what happened. But, you know, we've seen, you know, Steve mentioned the attack in Dongara, and they had a story ready for that, too, very quickly, which ended up being not even close to what seems to have happened there. So, you know, while I suppose you could say it's good that they went public with some information about this, the speed with which this information came out already kind of lent some doubt to what was being said. Then we know, you know, I mean, we've already heard the conditions in prison, the prisons in Tajikistan are pretty horrible. There's a lot of reasons why some inmates would not like to be there and would like to break out of prison just because of the treatment that they're routinely met with out there from the guards. So there's just some very simple reasons why something like this could start. You know, now, was ISIS responsible or someone in there? You know, again, as Elaine mentioned, no one from that group has claimed this, to the best of my knowledge so far. You know, we know they were in there. Now, were they motivated by something that ISIS told them to do if they did that? Or as I mentioned earlier, the fact that prison conditions are just so bad that they decided they had to do something about that? You know, did it start over religion? You know, who knows? What I thought was interesting was a lot of the people here at the radio who grew up during the Soviet times, when that happened, I mean, they were extremely skeptical of the Tajik government's version and said, you know, during Soviet times when prison riots used to happen, it was a way of culling the extremely undesirable people who had been imprisoned in the Soviet days. And if we look at who the victims are of this attack, you have to kind of wonder about that. We have two high-ranking members of the IRPT right. and the son of one of the major defectors to ISIS, and even Sheikh Tumur, for instance. You know, four out of 1,500 people, you know, 29 prisoners were killed, and four of them were high-profile figures. So, you know, while I certainly don't have any evidence to show that these people were set up in some way or that this was planned by anybody, you know, specifically to get these guys, you still have to wonder, you know, the odds against that, against those four guys getting killed out of 1,500 inmates, probably not very good. The only thing I'm pretty sure of is that what the authorities said is not all of the truth and might not even be very much of the truth.
About these names, Bruce, and also I like to take Selim John, your point on this, about the names Sheikh Timur that you mentioned. Of course, we know Gulmrat Halim of his background. And two other names like Sayyid Qiyamuddin Ghazi and Sator Karimov, both are high-ranking members of IRPT. What are the significance of they being killed in this incident?
I'm going to give this one to Selim John. Okay. He will know far more about these people than I do.
Okay, Selim John.
Sayyid Qiyamuddin Ghazi was one of the founders of the Renaissance Islamic Party of Tajikistan. And during the civil war, he was one of the main figures outside of Afghanistan, I mean, in Arabic countries. And Sheikh Timur is a religious leader, is a local religious leader, mostly kind of Sufi, Ishan. And Makhsoumi Sattar, also one of the prominent figures of the Islamic Party. But I wanted to disagree with Bruce somehow that I, you know, of course, I don't believe with the closed eyes to whatever the authorities are saying. Mm. However, there have been many reports that inside of the prison, there is no good relationship between different groups inside of the prison, not only Wahdat, but almost in all the prisons, because it kind of rivalry between moderate Islamists and representatives of the Salafi groups. So, and as we heard, that it had been happening many times, even at the starting of the praying, because Salafis have different way of prayer, and moderate Islams or Hanafi Islams have different. And also in explaining religious norms, there are big differences between two sides. Also, before the son of the Makhsoumi Sattar, who told us what he heard from his father, that there was clashes between Salafis and Islamic Party representatives, and Makhsoumi Sattar tried to negotiate with them and tried to help to prevent any kind of conflict. Also, before the son of the Makhsoumi Sattar, another prominent member of the Islamic Party, Jalaluddin Mahmud, who served as a member of the Reconciliation Commission of Tajikistan, bringing peace to Tajikistan, he told us maybe about 1 month before this riot that there is a dire situation inside of the prison, and the prison guard mostly helping Salafis in this kind of conflicts. Probably that could happen, what the official statement is saying. So,
Salimjan, what I'm saying, Steve, you want to jump in, so I would definitely like to hear your point on that. But what I was saying is, like, the type of challenges that Salimjan, you were talking about this prison, which might have caused this, you know, any other prison is different than this? Then what I'm saying is, why it happened here, not in a prison, I don't know, in some other place?
I think there were many riots in other prisons also too. Let's say in 2010 in Balkhash in Kazakhstan, and 2011 in Mangistau, Kazakhstan, even in 2015 in Kyrgyzstan. So again, even the one in Kyrgyzstan has some close signs like what happened in Khojand last November, and what happened in Dushanbe in Wahdat.
Steve,
can I add something on this, specifically on the city of Baghdad? Mm-hmm. I know, Steve, you want to speak, but this is also a place where there's a lot of unrest in Tajikistan. So in 2015, there was a case that a young man was arrested and beaten up by the police and died because of his injuries. Mm-hmm. And there were people gathering in front of the hospital. Well, he was hospitalized for some time in a coma. And 100 people gathered and asking for justice for this young man. And this is just before the attack launched by Nazarzada, which led to the complete annihilation of the IRPT. Right. So Wahdat is not, I would say, an ordinary place. This is a place where there's a lot of unrest. I don't have information from the inside, as Salimjan does, but just wanted to mention the context might matter in this case.
These are all really important points. I wanted to jump in and say a few things. I think, you know, Bruce was highlighting in a way the inconsistency between the government narrative earlier that, you know, the IRPT are somehow connected to ISIS, are somehow in partnership with Salafi extremists, or and are at the same time also Shia. Mm. While at the same time, we now see that, you know, even the government has to admit that ISIS members were attacking them, and how, you know, how just inconsistent that is with this the government's relentless campaign to track down, including from abroad, IRPT and other political opposition, while at the same time having to admit that ISIS is active in prisons. So I think both Salimjan and Bruce are making really important points that can coexist peacefully. But a few things. I want to say that, you know, at the time of the Khojand prison riot, we had a chance to meet with the Human Rights Ombudsman of Tajikistan, there's now a new person in that position who's been appointed. And we, you know, Human Rights Watch said, look, you've had this terrible incident, thousands of deaths, you need to conduct an independent investigation. And it's so sad that, you know, just 6 months later, we see an analogous event take place. I mean, I think this is probably the clearest lesson to date that the lack of rule of law, the absolute absence of civil society from these discussions is not just detrimental, it's truly dangerous. And I think it's interesting that if you look up conferences on violent extremism, there are actually quite a lot of these events taking place in Dushanbe on a frequent basis. You have not just the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, but even the OSCE and the UN conducting events on countering violent extremism in Dushanbe, in the capital. And then yet, miles from there, you have these violent incidents. And I think the disconnect and the wake-up call, if you will, to the government needs to be that without freedom of expression, without access to these prisons, you're not really dealing with the problem. The securitized approach of countering violent extremism should be replaced by a human rights-based approach to preventing violent extremism. Another important point is that just today or yesterday, a partner organization named Freedom Now filed a petition on behalf of 11 members of the IRPT. Now, sadly, only 11 of them are alive. Abdul Sattar Karimov was the 12th. And they filed this petition with the UN Human Rights Committee for their immediate and unconditional release on the grounds that their imprisonment is politically motivated.
Yeah, Steve, you raised lots of important points in what you just said, like authorities putting together IRPT and Islamic State in one box when it serves their interest, and then make them fight against each other when it serves to their interest in a different context. It's very interesting.
Right.
Inconsistent, as you said. So, okay, thank you very much, Steve. So we have a lot to talk about yet. So let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today I'm joined by Steve Severlo, Human Rights Watch's Central Asia researcher, and Dr. Helen Thibault, Associate Professor at the Nazarbayev University, Salim John Ayubov, Acting Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik Service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. I'm Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing questions surrounding the latest prison riot in Wahdat city of Tajikistan. Okay, now this incident happened almost 6 months after the similar incident in the other part of Tajikistan. Is there anything we should pay attention in terms of timing and consistency of these in the context of its larger implications to the region?
Well, I mean, I think the bottom line here is that they have a serious problem keeping order, and not just order, but providing for the safety of inmates, which sounds kind of strange. I mean, these people have been sentenced to prison and stuff. Many, and not me included, would say a lot of them are wrongly sentenced to these prisons, but they seem to have a huge problem keeping order inside these places. I mean, two big prison riots, you know, and far apart too, within 6 months, is just a little bit too much. Another problem they got is this obsession with controlling the narrative over this. I mean, you just can't get any good answers. You know, the Tajik government has their version of the story, and they won't let anyone else do any investigating on their own to try either to confirm or refute. So this is another problem that they're going to have to confront. Like I said, there's clearly the prison conditions are bad. Clearly the guards, for whatever reason, are unable to keep control at times over this. So I think it's time the Tajik government realizes that they need outside help with this. And really, I'm all for the independent investigation, too. I don't think it'll happen. But I think that every time something like this happens, there's a new set of questions arises about what exactly is going on, and there are no good answers for this. People are getting impatient with this constant, you know, what happened. You know, and Salim John would know better, too, but a couple of these people, the bodies weren't even handed over, as far as I know. They just buried them. You know, so now you have relatives that aren't, all they have is the government's version of these people being killed, and they can't even, they weren't even present at the funerals. They weren't allowed to see the bodies, so we don't know.
Just to follow up on that, Helen, I'm trying to draw comparison between this one and the one happened 6 months ago in Khujand. I mean, what are the similarities? What are the contradictions between these two events, the way it happened, the way it proceeded, the way it ended?
Well, what has been said earlier is that it's true that the government reacted very quickly, because I remember in November, there was very little information. There was a sort of a blackout on what happened for many days. And this time, they were very quick in responding. while also blocking a lot of the internet access in Tajikistan. So even now, not only social media is blocked, but also platforms like Yandex and Google. So there's something going on in Tajikistan again in terms of access to information. So, in terms of the motives, what was interesting, I remember our discussion on this very Kishlokovazi in November, is that at the time we did not know that ISIS actually claimed responsibility for that. They did. They announced it on one of their websites. I think a day and a half after it happened. This time it's been already 4 days, and there is no claim from ISIS that this has been done. I think this is a major difference. Although the narrative says the official narrative says that ISIS is involved. And what I found interesting of what Salim John said is that there were reports, right, that the guards were sometimes taking the side of ISIS, but Salafis. Mm. And this is interesting. It made me think of a book that I read recently called ISIS in Khorasan. So it's the presence of Islamic State in Afghanistan, mostly in Pakistan. So people say ISIS exporting itself in Central Asia, but not necessarily having a physical presence in the stands in the former USSR Republic, but mostly Afghanistan and Pakistan. But there is one mention, I think, of Tajikistan in the book, saying that ISIS was actually confident that they could make gains in Tajikistan because they could corrupt officials. That might include prison guards, if we think about it, and as well as sympathizers, because they have sympathizers. And I think the case of Gulmurat Khalimov is a very important example of that. This is a bit, I think, worrisome. I've been always very cautious to talk about the spillover Islamic radicalization in Tajikistan. But given the two latest incidents, I'm starting to be a bit worried about that.
What I'm saying is, like, you know, it's the only the official version of the story. They say, like, it is orchestrated by ISIS. And is there any other reason to believe that they were indeed ISIS?
I think, yes, so far, no, except that we could extrapolate that Khalimov's son could have been like his father, following the steps of his father. So that's one. Maybe you have something to add to this, Steve, but I personally don't have evidence. And the fact that ISIS has not claimed responsibility, I think, is a big sign that maybe they're actually not behind it. That which doesn't mean that it was not initiated by Islamic radicals like Salafis, for instance.
Those are really good observations by Helena. I just wanted to jump in with a few thoughts. One is that, I mean, Khalimov has a big family, and there were some reports that, you know, among his three wives, some parts of his family had tried to flee political persecution to Europe. Other parts we know, you know, were in mop-up operations, were killed, members of his family, and we don't know much about who Behruz Khalimov was, although I think Helen's point is, you know, is very logical that perhaps there was an affinity with ISIS. You know, a lot of questions again. I mean, how many of these guys in the prisons across Tajikistan are people that returned from Iraq and Syria? The government hasn't really revealed that. I mean, there has been some news in the past few weeks about women and children being returned, and you had a podcast about that recently, and of course that's really significant, but there may be other individuals among the population in the prisons who spent time in Iraq and Syria, and we just don't know who they are. Another point about Helen's good observation about the Salafis and hearing that the guards are siding with them. Another hypothesis that's been circulating is that the guards maybe side with them because they're afraid of them. You know, that we've seen in studies from Egyptian prisons, for example, where Al-Qaeda and ISIS are present, that these extremist groups will threaten the family members of prison guards, and they'll kill members of their families and make sure that they know that if they don't, you know, provide them whatever they want or need, or sort of corrupt them in the ways they need, then they could meet that same fate, that very violent end. And so perhaps there's an element of that. We just don't know. I think all this speaks to the need to shine a lot of light onto this.
Yeah.
And have professional, maybe, you know, in addition to civil society, I mean, obviously, of course, we need professionals like the FBI and other probably experts from international partners of Tajikistan to come in and do some research.
Wow, Steve, this is really eye-opening, particularly your examples from the Egyptian prison, where prison guards are threatened and forced to take sides with Salafis who are in jail. Even possibility of this scenario in Tajik jails scares me to death, which, if it is the case, would also show how influential these groups are becoming. Bruce, look into this in the context of what authorities say. The ISIS orchestrated attacks now in Wadat and earlier in Khojand, in all the other ISIS-related security incidents that took place in Tajikistan. What are we really talking about here? And what are the lessons there for authorities to learn from this?
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, I would think one step you'd want to do is isolate them from any of the other prisoners. That would be the obvious. At least one quick solution to easing this is to not have them mingle with the other prisoners. You know, that definitely would be a problem. And I'm not sure what would be a good answer for that. You know, how do you protect your own people who are supposed to be guarding these people so that they're not intimidated and they don't show either favoritism or prejudice against them at the same time? But I suppose, like I said, if that is the case, then it seems to me the first step would be to have an entirely separate ward for those people so that they aren't mixing and running into these other people where some kind of conflict could start over religious differences, ideological differences, whatever.
I hope, Selinjan, we are not scaring people by discussing the situation in these terms. I mean, these Salafi groups who are in prison, maybe outside, are they strong enough to threaten guards or their family members, even though they are in jail?
I don't know for sure, but one thing is clear and confirmed, that the guard is corrupted. And when it's corrupted, so of course it will be looking for the support of the biggest or strongest group of the inmates. Mm. Steve Broad pointed out a very interesting moment, remembering those who repatriated or returned from Syria and Iraq. So the numbers are 300 foreign fighters returned to Tajikistan. I think about 100 of them are pardoned by the government because they were able to show that they haven't taken part in the crimes. But how about two more hundreds? We don't know. And probably they're in those prisons. Maybe part of them in Wadat, part of them in Khojand. Of course, it's hard to answer that if ISIS have done this. However, I can say for sure if the ISIS ideas have done this. Since radicalization of the youth is also true, we can see it every day almost. For example, when people are commenting our materials, our articles on the webpage, and I am seeing that how attitude of the young people is changing. A lot of them support the ISIS ideas, and no jobs, and the social gap between rich and poor are widening, let's say, day by day, and also no justice. And when a young boy, Bruce, talking about a son of the Gulmurad Halim, he was a university student.
Right.
He was a lively, vibrant young man with a lot of good ideas and dreams.
And wanted to be
However,
a doctor, I believe.
He was sentenced for 28 years of prison.
Hmm.
And as we have, according to the information that we obtained from some former inmates who spent time inside of the Wadat, they are saying that the people around him made him a kind of icon, you know, it's because of his father. And he was a kind of, if we can say about the Soviet-style prisons or gulags, is let's say Pakhan or Smotriashi or something like this. He had some power inside of the prison. And of course, when we are hearing this news, we may believe that probably he had hand of this.
Thank you, Selimjan. You know, the Central Asia is very interesting region. Every time I sit down and start the discussion, aiming to conclude it within 40 minutes, but we quickly run out of time as we did now, and we still have a lot to talk about. But let's end it here with some final takeaways. You know, in the absence of the credible information, we are trying to make sense of what is going on based on best educated guesses, some would say. But here, one thing is very clear. The situation is changing, especially more prison riots and more ISIS-related attacks. They are something new, and they are serious developments. And earlier, there were comments on social media in regards to the latest prison breaks. Some rightly was saying that lately more people have died in Tajikistan in terrorism-related incidents than any other cause, which must be really an alarming development for the authorities, I should say. And it also shows that it needs proper attention. So just to conclude the discussion, so where the solution lies to this and where it begins when it relates to the Tajik government?
A few things. Well, the most urgent concern, as I laid out in the beginning, is to get the prisoners at most risk released and at the very least transferred to some kind of home detention, because our information is that there are Salafi and or ISIS or other threats to these prisoners, including torture from prison officials all over Tajikistan and all of the prisons where they are, including the security services, the pretrial detention facility where, for example, Mahmoud Ali Hait is, who we talked about on a previous podcast. So we need to immediately and unconditionally see IRPT and other political prisoners like Zayed Saidov immediately released. I would say, secondly, the Red Cross should immediately have discussions with the government about access to the prisons. You know, I think another area is that when Gulmurad Halima made his video of defecting to ISIS, what he took aim at in Tajikistan and what he sort of cited as justification, and of course we know that it's self-serving, and we know that we can't, you know, take it all as a straightforward rationale, but what he said was that human rights violations, restrictions on religious freedom, on religious dress, on the wearing of hijabs, on the wearing of beards, were at the core, were at the heart of this radicalization, dare I use that very fraught term. But that sits at the core of this. In addition to torture in prisons, we have major ongoing abuses in the area of religious freedom and political freedom, which are exacerbating all these problems. And so I think it's yet another wake-up call that the government needs to initiate a political dialogue with these opposition groups, which, you know, I think it's also relevant to mention here that IRPT and other figures that are in the diaspora, a lot of what they're spending their time doing in Europe is actually talking about de-radicalization and the risks of Central Asian migrants entering extremist groups. So I think if the government were smart, they would start having a dialogue on these really fraught and difficult issues. They're already talking to the UN. They're already talking to the OSCE. But start including human rights organizations, political opposition, and NGOs. And I think we'll see, you know, we could see some solutions come into sight.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Very brief notes from Bruce and Helene. Let's start, Helene, with you. I mean, what would be your suggestion towards the solution to this problem?
I totally agree with Steve. And I think the rule of law is really what's most important, because we see now in Tajikistan a tightening authoritarianism. Tajikistan has become in the last year a very strong authoritarian state. There were much more liberties 10 years ago than they are now. And the economic situation is not improving. So in context of very difficult economic situations, no hope of prosperity for people, heavy corruption, and then absence of rule of law and absence of freedom, even for women to dress how they want, and for men as well. So I think we see that this extreme repression is very unsustainable. And I think these particular events, recent events, show that the system is cracking.
Right. Bruce, very quickly.
I'm going to go with kind of echo Steve's comments a little bit about they really need to let more independent groups come in and investigate and find out what's happening. First of all, as I mentioned, the Tajik government's versions of this are lacking credibility increasingly in the area. And two, you know, Tajikistan is not unique in having this problem of having people return from these conflict zones. This is happening in neighboring Central Asian states, for instance. They could learn a lot if we could find out what's going on inside these prisons and how to defuse it. It would benefit more than just Tajikistan. It would benefit a lot of other countries as well.
Very good point. Thank you. Salim Jan, do you want to add in just two words anything into this? Otherwise, I'm going to end the discussion.
I fully support what Helene said about the political liberties. If we had the RPT inside of the country and functioning and in the parliament and in the society, then the radicalization was not possible in this society,
I think.
Right now we are talking, and just today several young people again had received long-term jail sentences. They will go inside, so, and the situation will continue, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Selim John Ayubov, Acting Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service, for your insight. And big thanks goes to Steve Severlu, Human Rights Watch's Central Asia researcher, and Dr. Helen Thibault, Associate Professor at the Nazarbayev University, and Bruce Spanier, Editor of Radio for Europe, Radio Liberties, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
And this
thank
it,
you.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis. Until next week, bye-bye.